So who's going to get MVP this year, Hellebuck or Byfuglien?
Yeah, that's a great question. Winnipeg Jets. They're rolling. The Winnipeg Jets is so weird right now. Being from Manitoba, being a fan of the Winnipeg Jets, not my number one team, but probably number two. And then Line A and Connor got some pretty deadly contracts, I guess, for a bridge deal. But I still got to think, man, I still think Line A is good. I watched him play in that Devils game, the only game I've watched so far, and he set up guys. He played the puck well. I just think it's shitty that everyone was just on his back the whole time all summer, you know, considering you don't know the situations. But I'm glad Line A is back in the lineup. Hopefully Winnipeg can string together some wins and get something figured out in that defensive zone, and maybe Byfuglien will come back, maybe not. But I think either way, they got a pretty solid team still.
Yeah, Line A, I mean, he comes up clutch quite a bit, so I feel like he's definitely an asset.
Yeah.
And he can execute like nobody else can on that team.
Yeah, exactly. The thing was, is like last year when you score 18 goals in 1 month and then score two the next, and everyone was ragging on him.
Yeah.
Well, would it look better if you scored 9-9 or 10-10 for those 2 months?
Yeah.
And then you look at like that draft year, like why is everyone giving Line A shit? Maybe they should give Cheveldayoff and his team a little bit of, you know, a little bit of shit there, I guess, for better words. But like they picked that what they thought is number two guy. There's not many other guys on that list that draft year in 2016 that would be, you know, I would want to my team. I don't know, maybe that's a little biased, but other than Matthews, but he went first up for obvious reasons. But
yeah,
Line A's a sniper, not an all around superstar. We gotta figure that out.
Yeah, he's good too, and like I think a big thing comes like just having the team support and having the other dynamics of the team clicking to help him execute.
Yeah,
is a good thing too, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing too, is like when you get drafted, you know, and you get drafted after Matthews, you come into your season, you do super well, everyone's pumped, everyone's behind you, and then all of a sudden you have a shit year, then your superstar status is like, if I was thinking of it as a hockey player, I'd be like, man, where'd all that support go, you know?
Yeah.
It'd be tough, man. It'd be tough to be a young hockey player in that league. Anyways, this is an outdoor podcast, so maybe we should talk about the outdoors.
Yeah, so welcome to the Panoramic Outdoors Hockey Podcast.
Yeah. We are sitting in Winnipeg and another hotel.
Yeah, we got a balling-ass room here.
Yeah, so we often shoot our podcast. We often record our podcast in different locations because of geographical reasons. And I live in Brandon, Chase lives here, Tristan lives over there, etc. And so we try to meet up in different spots. And just so happened I was working in Winnipeg, and we're at the Hampton Inn and Suites by the airport. And if you guys ever come into the city to stay, although it's by the airport, you got to check this place out. They're super nice. They hooked us up with this room. I don't know. Don't know what else to say. But like every time I've come here, booked here personal or for professional reasons or work reasons, it's always so nice and it's always easy to check in, check out. And I highly recommend this place.
Yeah. Is there a slide here?
I don't know.
The pool?
I'm not a big pool guy. But they do have a gym. Yeah, they got a gym. They got a pool. I don't think there's a slide and hot tub and everything. Yeah. It's super clean and always nice.
So. I don't mind tossing the old cannonball once in a while. yeah, but this place is nice, man. It's got to be not that old, that's for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, so we're in Winnipeg. Chase and I are behind the mics tonight, and we're going to do a little like fall in review, I guess.
Yeah. So Tristan's in Montreal right now, so he's kind of sitting this one out just for geographical reasons. So yeah, Sheldon and I are just gonna talk about where we're at with our fall and kind of what's coming to the future for us.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess I'll start.
Yeah, sorry, man.
Hasn't been too crazy of a fall for me, so I had a couple things happen. Obviously, my bow broke, and still kind of trying to put that together. And I think I have a solution figured out here, and I think it's going to come together pretty soon. had some pretty good action on some of the trail cams in the areas that I was bow hunting. So they haven't been checked in a few weeks. Hopefully tomorrow I can get back out there to check them. The other guy that I'm hunting with out there, Chris, he's been checking them. He checked them last time and he found the pictures of all the big bucks out there. So I was pretty jealous about that.
Yeah, he probably went through his computer and sent you a bunch of ones from years prior just to get you out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So did you're getting a new bow or new to you bow?
Yeah.
And what did you go with?
It's a PSE.
PSE, eh?
Yeah, PSE
Evo. So you're leaving the Hoyt family for PSE?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever. It's a few factors involved. Big one is price. I getting a pretty good deal on this bow. I read some reviews on it, and I haven't read one bad review on this bow. So
can you hear my chair squeaking in the mic?
Yeah.
Maybe I should change chairs.
I think they're all like that. They're like leather.
Yeah, that's the thing with bows, though, and we've talked about it in other podcasts. You can spend lots of money or spend enough like to fulfill your budget and still come out with the same outcome.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I was doing some research on the difference between like mid-level bows and the higher level bows. And like the mid-level bows essentially just have cheaper components on them, whereas mm-hmm. like a high-level bow would have these components. They would be like aluminum or like stainless steel or something like that. Probably aluminum because it's lighter. But yeah. And then the mid-level bows, they would be like plastic components essentially.
Right.
So I guess that just longevity you're looking at and some, I guess, could come down to precision also. So I had a battle with myself being like, okay, I could buy like a cheaper bow and probably kill a deer with it. But I'd always have that thought in the back of my head thinking I could shoot better with something else. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's the thing too. Like, I always think of it as like buying a truck. Like you can buy an SLT or buy, you know, a Longhorn for the Dodge series, right? At the end of the day, it's still going to drive you to work and it's still going to drive you to the field. But do you want the, you know, nicer seats and the nicer radio and the nicer this and that? And that's kind of how bows are too. It's like at the end of the day, it's still going to fulfill your need of, you know, getting an animal on the ground. But yeah, with longevity, I guess too. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Like my Hoyt lasts me like 10 years. So
yeah. And that's the other thing too. I guess when you're purchasing a bow or whatever, it's like lots of guys, it might be the only bow they buy for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
You know, so do you spend the extra bit of money or, you know, I might upgrade in 3 or 4 years here.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Well, there's lots of guys that buy upgrade yearly essentially too, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then that's what they're into. And just like the trucks, it's kind of like, you got to pick your battles, right? Where do you want to, I mean, some people are lucky enough and have enough income that they could probably do that with every aspect of their life and take the upgrade. But, unfortunately me, I have to be a little bit more selective of where I put my money, investments essentially.
Yeah, right? For sure. And like, talking about trucks, like I think of mine, I just purchased it in January and I've already got like 37,000 kilometers. So I do put a little bit of extra money into it for comfort because I know I'm putting those miles on every year. And
you spend a lot of time in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I basically live out of there, especially now with the Panoramic. I'm just waiting for my mileage checks from Panoramic, but the accountant doesn't want to pay those yet.
Yeah, we might have to backdate those ones.
Right on.
So yeah, that's what I'm excited about for the near future there.
Yeah, you've only been talking about it for like 4 weeks now.
I know.
Every time I talk to you, you're like, I'm supposed to get tomorrow. And
I know, and I was so jacked up at the start of this season too, because it was like, this is going to be my best bow season yet.
Well, it's one that you'll remember, I guess.
Shit happened, so.
Yeah.
We're doing what we can do.
Yeah.
What about you up until now? What's shaking?
Yeah, I've been doing the bow hunting thing. And it seems like I'm on repeat on this podcast talking about it because I haven't fulfilled any tags, but I'm only whitetail hunting. And I actually have quite a few good stories about it, and I don't know if I want to save them for like a whitetail episode because I've got a few. But the one good one from actually this past weekend, I was walking to a stand and walking through a field, you know, midday to get to my stand. And it was wet. Like, it's been wet in Manitoba here for the last fucking month.
Yeah, it's been pretty wild.
So I'm like looking at my feet because I'm looking for like tracks or whatever in the mud and dirt and stuff. And then I hear something kind of growl at me. And I look up, and I like freaked out, man. Like, I was scared. And I looked up, and there was a badger like at his hole.
A badger?
Yeah, like maybe 30 yards away. Wow. Just staring at me. And then I was just like, I don't know what I was going to do because I'm like thinking, is he going to charge me? You know, like, I have no idea. I haven't encountered a badger before. But anyways, and he took off and went like ran down the field to another hole and went in. And so, yeah, it was pretty funny. But
that's a cool encounter.
Yeah. They're vicious little things. I remember when my dad and I were scouting one day, and I remember I was super young, and we drove up. There was like this sand embankment beside this old gravel road, and we drove up, and there was a badger out of its den with its like little, I don't know, like kits or cubs or whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
And so we drove up, and we stopped, and the badger came running to the road and started like gnawing at our tires on our truck.
Come on.
Like, that's like, yeah, it was like trying to protect its young or whatever. But yeah, that was, they're kind of freaky, so I was a little scared there. Didn't ruin my night by any means, but
yeah,
ruined a pair of shorts.
Was it a honey badger?
Well, no, I don't think that one was a honey badger.
No, I don't think we have honey badgers here.
Yeah. And then yeah, other than that, a little bit of deer hunting. I'm leaving this week to go up for a moose hunt for 4 days. It's going to be a short and sweet hunt, but yeah, it's been a long time and long process of trying to get some stuff figured out. And yeah, I'm going with Hack, who we had on that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Brad. So me and him are gonna go up, and got a conservation tag for that area. That's partnership tag, so we got that in place, and got a couple guys to take us out, some family to take us out. And
that's wicked.
Yeah, spend a few days.
Yeah, I'd be pumped up about that.
And then do walleye fishing. We went there quite a few years ago now, not, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago probably now.
Yeah, it's got to be three for sure, maybe four.
Yeah. So you can vouch for it. Like, if the moose hunting is a little slow, you can throw a line in the water and catch some walleye. And
yeah,
it's a pretty good spot.
Wicked walleye fishing.
Yeah.
So remember how pumped up Tristan was just reeling in walleye off the dock there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was a good trip. So, yeah, that should be good. I'm looking forward to it. The only thing I'm not looking forward to is, I guess they've been having some bear problems in there.
Oh, really?
Like, bear ripped up a few seats on the boat and, you know, gas cans or whatever. So, yeah. Not that, like, it'll be a problem when we're there, but I just hope we don't show up and something's destroyed, right? And
yeah.
Spend those 4 days kind of struggling to make it work. I know they went in there, I don't know, a month or so ago, and it, like, yeah, tore up a tent and, like, yeah, it was brutal, but hope we don't get there and everything's just screwed.
Yeah, that would suck.
Yeah, for sure. That Nipaw tourism thing, we did that with Josh McFadden there a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
what'd you think of that? Like, that's something new for both of us. I've never done one.
It was, I had a blast.
Yeah,
I was exhausted by the end of it.
Oh my god.
But I think everyone had a fantastic time, and yeah, I don't know. He's got a good thing going on there.
Yeah.
And we did some real neat stuff, and I've seen a different side of Nipaw that I've never seen before. So
yeah, for sure. Cool. We, what we did is we did a, just for anyone that's listening, we did a project with Tourism Nipaw. So basically Panoramic and Tourism Nipaw kind of came together and came up with a plan to try to create some exposure and content creation for the town of Nipaw. And there's a lot of things that Nipaw has to offer that maybe people don't see or understand when it comes to like some of the outdoor aspects of it, and some of the, you know, local like hunters and fishermen and stuff like that. There's things to do there, and it's a good spot. So we teamed up with them. We came up to have an idea of doing an outdoor cookout. So we got Josh McFadden involved, and he did the meetup. And yeah, we spent our weekend in Nipaw filming stuff, taking video, pictures. And yeah, it was a blast, man. It was so much fun.
Yeah. It was, that, without sounding too romantic on the podcast here, that night we watched the moonrise there. So it's like a super red moon or whatever they call it, or like a harvest moon.
Yeah.
And so we were waiting for that to come up. So we kind of got a good vantage point. So the moon was kind of coming up right over the town of Neepawa almost. And we were pretty close to the park. And it was would have been a perfect night for sitting in a tree stand, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're sitting on this mile road. And these deer just start coming out of the woodworks right before sunset. It was pretty awesome. Couple good bucks.
Yeah, those were nice bucks. Yeah, that was fun. I had a great time. And yeah, we had like a four different like meals, I guess, and into one big meal.
Courses, yeah.
Courses, I guess.
Yeah.
Normal people would call it. But yeah, it was great. Josh did a wicked job. We had 23 guests at a round of fire, basically watched Josh cook food over the fire. We
three ate fires.
It. Yeah. Oh, yeah, three fires. And a big shout out to Innocent Gun, who helped support that event. And they supplied us with some cocktails and, yeah, it was great, man. It was a great time.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I had a blast. Everyone there looked like they were having a good time. Annette helped us out a bunch there,
yeah.
Her and her husband.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. The whole tourism, she's part of that tourism board, and she kind of took the bull by the horns, and she had us out to her, speaking of bulls.
Yeah.
She had her out to, had us out to her little farm, and she's got a little bit of everything out there.
Yeah. She had got like what are they called? Miniature heifers or something like that?
Yeah. It's like small cows.
Yeah.
And they have this one bull. And then they have this goat, this male goat. What was it? I can't remember
the Billy.
Yeah. But anyways, he was all horned up because the women sheep were on the other side of the fence. So he couldn't get at them, but he was all horned up and he was doing his like male behaviors, I guess.
Yeah.
And then he would ram the bull and then going around the bull's nuts and yeah. He wanted to fight right something.
Belly.
Yeah. It was great.
Oh, that's Josh hilarious.
Loved that shit.
Yeah. No, that's pretty cool there too. Seen lots of different stuff.
Yeah. And what about waterfall? You guys been in the marsh at all?
I went out once. Tristan, I think he's been on a couple more times than I have. But I've only been on once with him and Tyler. And the spot we went to, we normally do good in. And it's been kind of a go-to spot in past years. But this year, there's just not as many birds there.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of weird. Water was low. We still came out with two limits.
Oh, yeah.
So can't complain about that. But just the action was not as fast and as it's been in the past there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was pretty awesome, though. It was a nice day to be out there. And, yeah, caught some good sunset there. Caught a shooting star on the way home on the boat ride.
Yeah, that's cool.
I did I went for a little walk through the marsh. And every time I do this, I always kick myself because I always think I'm going to just find this mass of ducks in the this hidden hole somewhere. So anyways, I start cruising through the marsh and I kind of keep on going. And then I try to remind myself, okay, make sure you turn around before you're dead tired and can't move. And essentially I made it like most of the way back before I was like, oh man, I should have turned about 200 yards sooner back towards the boat or whatever. And I was thinking, I was like, man, walking through the marsh has like got to be like 10 times harder than climbing a mountain. Because like I did like maybe half a mile in the marsh and I was just dead. Then I just sweated up after that, trying to dry out.
Yeah, I've been talking to quite a few guys. I haven't even been out hunting for birds yet. Really no excuses other than there's not many birds around Neepawa area. And it's been raining like every day on the weekend. So
yeah,
I'm not like that hardcore, but I do know some guys that are that hardcore and they're killing it. Like they're doing very well.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to a guy today and we were talking about blinds. Have you ever seen those ones? It looks like it's a 2x6 and it's bungee cord and you like put it in, that's all it is. And then you like put your willows up and they like lean over on you.
Kevin was telling me about that yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And apparently they're like the cat's ass.
Yeah.
They look awesome and they don't take up any room.
Yeah. And he was, Kevin, yesterday he stopped in? Yeah, I think it was yesterday. And So he's showing me pictures of these blinds and trying to explain them to me.
Do you remember
me.
The name of them? Sorry.
No, he just called them willow blinds, and same kind of thing, 2x6 with like a elastic, he said.
Yeah.
And he said they cut the willows a couple of days ahead of beforehand and put them in there, lay them down, and then throw like some plywood over top of them with weighted down so the willows kind of straighten out.
Oh, okay.
And then he said they work wicked because otherwise you'd be swimming in layout blinds in some of those fields.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and like I know the ones that I seen online, they come in like sections. Oh, man, I wish I could remember the name of it. But they come in sections, and then you can like add on sections.
Really?
And then you can use them for anything. Like you can use them as a deer blind.
Yeah.
You know, because you can just put whatever you want in them.
That's awesome.
So yeah, that would be cool.
I'm going to start moving towards these willow blinds, I think, man, for like field hunts and stuff like that.
Yeah, you see more and more guys using them.
Yeah, and it's such a pain in the ass to dress a layout blind in the morning or even the night before, you know what I mean? Your fingers are all busted up and filled with.
You imagine like, I don't know if many guys do it, but I know a lot of guys have told me stories, but imagine digging pits for 6 or 7 guys. And
man,
that'd be a lot of work.
Yeah, that'd be a mess. And then lots of guys used to run the Magnum decoys over top the pits, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or like burlap or something.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't think you could be digging pits this year because you'd be getting filled with water with all this rain we've been getting.
No. Kevin was saying like, so he just got off, he was coming back from Lac de Bonnie, I think you said he was hunting or something like that. And yeah, I think it was Lac de Bonnie. He said it's so wet out there that if you were to take like a hard step in the field that, he said there would be like ripples in the mud because it's pretty much floating.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
That's insane. I had a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you going to say something else?
I was just going to say I was driving back from Steinbach this morning and the sun was just coming up and there's so much water in the fields there that the geese aren't even leaving the fields to go back to the river at night. Yeah. They're roosting in the fields.
Yeah. There's a section over by Nipaw that it's a low spot and there's lots of water in it. And the Canadas were going there before all this rain, they were going in there and now then flying back to the creek and or the slough or whatever at night. Now, yeah, same thing. They're staying out there all night because we're thinking about like, oh, let's go hunt them. Like there's, you know, quite a few, enough for a good hunt for a few guys. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, they're not flying anymore. They're staying out there all day. That sucks.
Yeah.
My question was, have you ever came across a crane decoy? Like, do they have those?
The only crane decoys I've seen, I hunted cranes probably, it's got to be like 10 or 15 years ago now. Quite a while ago. My uncle, he used to be an outfitter, had some crane decoys, and my dad wanted to go crane hunting, so of course Tristan and I went with him.
Yeah.
Because he took us hunting everywhere he went, essentially. And we went and killed a bunch of cranes, but they were just cardboard cutouts. They were silhouettes.
Oh, yeah.
And they were painted that sandy color kind of thing, like cranes. And the day we went out hunting was actually kind of a perfect morning because it was kind of foggy out. So I like the crane's vision, I'm going to say, it wasn't that great. So we were quite successful. But that was still back when like crane meat was kind of that had that off. I mean, lots of people still aren't crazy about it. And maybe it's just the thought of the birds because the birds are kind of musky smelling when you kill them. But you watch Meat Eater and those guys eat them up there and they taste just like sirloin steak. So
yeah. The reason why I ask you this question, there's a few different thoughts here. First of all, is that the only crane decoys I've ever seen were on TV and they're actually down in like Texas and there were killed cranes that they stuffed and reused them as decoys.
Yeah.
Which I don't think you're allowed to do that in Manitoba, first of all. With like real feathers or something, I think it might be illegal. I'd have to look that up.
I think I've seen somebody using real goose decoys like that once.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I don't know then. That's something to look up.
Yeah.
But anyways, I was talking to a fella, and he tells me, and I hope someone can like message us and tell us if this is totally wrong or right, but he tells me that when he sets up his Canada Goose spread, he sets up two crane decoys in that spread because the Canada geese know how sketchy cranes are. And if there's cranes in that field, they know that it's safe. And in my mind, it makes so much sense because I've been working a lot down south, southwestern Manitoba, and there's cranes over there like crazy, like south of Verdun. If you guys want to go crane hunting, go down there and find a field because it's amazing. Get permission, though, please. And but yeah, you drive down the road and they just jump up quick. And that's funny how you said that that morning was perfect for crane hunting because I've also heard from a few guys that cranes can see very well.
Yeah.
Like compared to a Canada. So yeah, I guess like what would be your ideal hunt, like bird hunting for a field? It'd probably be foggy with a bit of wind would be ideal, right? And good cloud cover. And
Yeah. Okay. Cloud cover for sure. It'd be pretty tough to hunt them on a bluebird day. And
yeah.
I don't even know if I'd want to commit to like a layout blind hunting them. I think I'd almost rather hunt them at some sort of natural cover in that field, you know, whether it's a low slough spot or like a tree line or something like that, and try and set up something like that on them.
Yeah.
Just because they are so smart and their vision's good.
So, yeah, I guess the part of my little point here is somebody try it and then let me know if it works. And
yeah.
If this guy that told me to set up these two crane decoys in your spread of Canada's, if that works, I mean, that could be a game changer for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So two, there's your tip.
2 points. Is there anybody out there hunting cranes in Manitoba? And yeah, let's hear your thoughts on that. And my second point is with the two crane decoys in the spread, we've also kind of done that with like duck hunting. We'll often toss in like some coot decoys or something like that just to kind of mix it up so it doesn't look so ominous that.
Yeah. We one time.
Or maybe not ominous, but I don't know.
This is like, I don't know how many years ago it was, but we went Canada goose hunting and one of my cousins came and he had a box full of decoys and he had like a bag of like half a dozen snow goose ones. So we're like, oh yeah, we'll throw those out and mix them up a little bit. And oh my God, we couldn't get a bird to land and we blamed it on the snow goose decoys.
But really?
Who knows? It could have been anything. But
we used to toss a couple of snows in the back of the spread once in a while.
Oh yeah.
Because you often see a little flock of snows cruising around with some geese once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. That's our thought too. And you know, that's what I mean. Like it could have been anything. Could have been our blinds. Could have been our whole setup. Could have been anything.
Yeah.
We blamed it on those snow geese. It's funny because there's a lot of guys running those like dive bomb. I was listening to Harvester. They bought some. I think we were talking about it earlier in a podcast maybe. But like they're running those like silo socks or whatever you want to call
them.
And Canada goose ones.
Yeah.
And man, I think that's something that I'm going to have to invest in.
Yeah. It's good when there's a little bit of wind, right?
And yeah.
Add some movement.
Yeah. And it's funny because I honestly think that like Canada goose decoys or any decoy maker like tricked everyone thinking that you got to have like the perfect decoy to bring in birds because the birds are smarter or something now. But like we were talking about it the other day is like, man, you hear of like grandparents and dads and stuff using like old rubber, like tubes of tires and using like old wood ones that they built themselves.
Yeah.
And they hunted geese and they got geese and ducks out of them.
Yeah.
And now we're spending, you know, $300-$400 for half a dozen full body decoys.
Yeah.
And then now we're going back to silo socks and it's working again. Like something happened here.
Yeah. And it's funny because like one thing I'm religious about when I'm going field hunting is throwing out silhouettes. Too, because it's just like I feel like it adds movement, and it's like people have been using silhouette decoys since who knows when, really. Yeah. And I don't know, you see guys out there that'll have like 200 birds in the spread or something, like decoys in the spread, and I can see for like snow goose hunting how that might work, and like the solo socks or silo socks or whatever you call them. Those would be easy, but like putting out, we sometimes put out like 75, 100 full body, like Bigfoot sometimes.
Right.
I guess if you're hunting like 9 people in a spread, that might be something to do. But like most of the time I plan on going out, if there's just a few people to hunt the field, there's only maybe like a dozen or maybe 2 dozen decoys out there.
Yeah. And like my theory behind all of this talk too is that when you, so let's just say you have 6 to 9 guys out in the field in layout blinds, you kind of need, maybe you do need those big decoys to like kind of hide those, right?
Yeah.
Which might be obvious, but now if you're going, if guys are getting back into like a willow blind, like let's say they're hunting like 4 or 5 guys beside each other in a willow blind, do you really need to hide that willow blind? Because you want it to look like a bush, right?
Yeah.
So now you can maybe get away with a smaller decoy setup or socks or whatever you're using. And then like that would be compared to like back in the day when they used to dig pits and use those old shitty decoys.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to hide so many people.
Yeah.
You know, maybe.
You know what often happened to us too, especially getting into late season. I mean, I haven't hunted birds as hard for the past 2 years as I have for like the previous, we'll say like 10 years essentially. But, you know, you go for a morning field hunt and she's pretty cold out there. And usually the coldest time of day that it's going to be is right before the sun rises.
Yeah.
So that temperature will dip. Your decoys will get frosted up, especially those like full bodies,
yeah,
like Bigfoots and stuff like that. And then you got to knock all the frost off all the decoys. Otherwise, nothing's going to come in. So yeah, if you've got 75 in the spread, that's a pretty good task.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, like I've said there, we're running that willow blind, and I really want to just go out there and set up the willow blind, just set up our socks. Like we got, I don't know what we have, maybe 6 or 8 dozen of them at the most, and just set those up and see if there's any difference. Because, man, I am kind of lazy, I'll admit it, but like, why would I ever want to go and set up, you know, 5 dozen full bodies and then shells and then try to get the heads on the bodies, etc.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like a lot of work.
There's a lot of work there.
I wouldn't mind like mixing in maybe a dozen to keep out front for when the birds are coming in, and you know, so they're focused on those, and then they got the movement on the sides, kind of throws them off. And
yeah. Like I did a spring, it's not even a hunt, but I was working way up north in the spring in Churchill. I went on a hunt with a guy, and we literally took out one bag of shell snow goose decoys and probably 60 shopping bags, like white plastic shopping bags on coat hangers. And that's what we set up, and we did phenomenal. Like it was unbelievable.
I like
so
that.
I mean, like there's something's going on here with these decoy manufacturers.
Yeah. But, oh, it's hilarious.
But yeah, like, yeah, the waterfowl thing, I got to get into it this year. And but yeah, talking to a lot of guys, that a lot of guys are doing very well, and some guys are saying in their areas the birds aren't there yet, but hopefully get a few north winds and push some of these suckers down here.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I noticed like there's select number of fields that are just loaded with birds, and then there's just like nothing.
Yeah.
But I haven't been out cruising around looking that much, but just from what I've seen so far.
Yeah.
That's what I've kind of noticed. So it seems like you're either going to do real good or nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And there's probably a little bit to say too on, we had a kind of a hot, dry summer, and our spring I think was fairly dry if I can recall. So maybe there wasn't as many, you know, ponds and sloughs and stuff for those local birds to lay eggs, and maybe they're not around certain areas. Because, like I said, around Nipaw, man, like there's a few, but there's not as many as there used to be, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Might be an off year, whatever, but.
Yeah, could be.
So, yeah.
What do you got, besides the moose hunt, what do you got coming up? Any plans?
Well, not really. I'd like to get a, I've said it to you a few times, to get into that marsh and do a duck hunt. I've never like done that before.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like strictly field hunting. I mean, like we hunt the odd slough. So, trying to come up with a plan to maybe get a few people together and go for a hunt in the morning and cook some food in the afternoon and finish it off with a podcast maybe.
Yeah, that'd be wicked.
But other than that, yeah, like not much. I'll just deer hunt and then hopefully get into waterfowl hunting here right away. And this moose hunting trip's been kind of stressing me out. Like I said, for a few weeks, everything's starting to come together. And once I get back from that, things should slow down a little bit and be able to get out there somewhere.
Nice, nice.
You?
Giraffes?
Hippos?
Yeah. The only thing I pretty much have planned right now, besides trying to get out on a few more archery hunts, bring that up again. maybe a bird hunt. If I can squeeze it in, and we usually do a week, opening week in our deer camp up in the ducks.
Oh, yeah. What side is that That's the
east side.
East side. Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay.
So I have a bit of a conflict there, kind of midweek, but I might try and get out for 3 or 4 days after that.
Oh yeah.
And slide out there, hopefully.
Right on.
So looking forward to that. We found a pretty good area that we haven't hunted in before last year when we were up there. So I'd really like to set up a stand or a blind there and just spend 3 days sitting in there. And we've seen a pretty good buck on the road, across the road, actually, like must have been like 50 yards in front of us. So
nice
coming out of there.
Do you guys have cameras up there?
Not really. Nothing like that we'd rely on.
Yeah.
I still got a camera way up in the bush that's been out there for like 2 years up where I used to hunt deer. I got to pick up. That's the one I got lost at this summer.
Oh, yeah. And you chugged a whole flat of Gatorade when you're
done. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys are just talking about trail cam picks and stuff. It seems like there's a lot of good deer around. And the numbers, I think, are getting back up to the high side, I think, of things. And, like, even the spots where I've been hunting, like, it seems like every second doe has twins.
Yeah.
And there's not too many dry does, even at that. So
yeah, seems like good recruitment.
Yeah, it seems like good. And, like, I don't know, the bucks seem to be there.
Yeah.
Like,
even bucks are looking good.
Yeah.
You know what I've been doing lately?
No, I don't. Tell me.
Just playing around with this iHunter Manitoba a little bit more because my GPS went down there this summer.
Right.
And
that's iHunt. What is it called?
It's an app.
Yeah.
For those of you that are listening, it's called iHunter. And there's like, it's like the Canadian version of Onyx Maps.
Right. Is that the one Kevin was talking about?
Yeah.
We were talking about that today at lunch. Me and my boss, actually.
Really?
Yeah. He's a big hunter. And do you want to go through that quick? Because I think there's a lot of people that don't really know much about it, but I think it could be beneficial.
Yeah. So it's like, I think Kevin touched on it quite a bit when he did the elk podcast, but for people that are listening now, they have you can download each province and it shows like the game hunting areas and the WMAs and stuff like that. What it doesn't show is private land and public land, but it does have the WMAs on there, so you can bank on those. And then you can actually download the map data, so it's like a satellite map essentially, and it shows you, like, your phone has GPS on it, so it tracks you. You can put waypoints on there, you can put tracks on there, and I've been trying to use it more and more. So I got a couple spots GPS, and I have like a couple of my areas downloaded onto my phone, so you don't need service to run it, the satellite imagery, essentially. Oh, yeah. Saved on your phone. So that's cool. So you can run it without.
You said that as like the WMAs on there?
Yeah.
So does it have like landowner?
It doesn't have landowner information on it.
Obviously for like privacy reasons.
Yeah. But I think they're also like the guy that owns, that's run, like the owner of the apps or that runs the apps, I think he's lives in Edmonton or something like that. And I think he is trying that out in Alberta right now.
Oh yeah.
In certain areas. So it's, it's a lot of info to gather.
Yeah.
For sure.
Damn him. Cause I swear to God, one time I was deer hunting with a buddy like years ago. And I said, you know, what would be wicked is that if there's a app on your phone that you could check out landowner who owns this section. And then, you know, when you're looking for permissions and stuff, instead of getting the RM maps,
yeah,
those can get expensive, especially if you're in different parts of the province. But
yeah,
but even just knowing that, you know, where the public land is huge, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then if you have like private like landowner maps or whatever too, you can square off and mark the areas that are public or the areas that you can hunt, so you know where you're at.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
So that. Is that basically the fruits of that app?
Yeah, I think it costs like $5 to download it. I got it when it was free still. And then to get like the full access to it, you download the pro version, which is $5, another $5. And then you can do waypoints, tracks, and stuff like that. Uh-huh. And it also gives you essentially all your season information. So, like, when the season opens, if it's one deer, two deer, like birds, big game.
Yeah, and it probably gives you all, like, that other stuff that's maybe handy for some people, but the other hunting apps have, like, the moon cycles and, like, when's the best fishing. And
Yeah.
All that sun stuff up, is actually kind of handy, and it's pretty interesting to look at.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. So I've been messing around with that and learning it.
And speaking of public lands, what's going on with the politics stuff.
The political, the 100-day action plan.
We can edit this out if you don't want to talk about it. But are we selling off, like, is the plan, not we, but the plan as a Manitoba government, are they wanting to sell some of the lease lands or auction them off, I guess?
So on the MWF front of things, they've kind of been digging into this because it obviously is a pretty sensitive topic with outdoorsmen and women.
Yeah. I think, like, a lot of farmers and stuff like that, like,
for sure. Yeah. It sounds like it'll affect the farmers more than the outdoors people.
Right.
So we haven't seen anything in writing yet, essentially, from the politicians saying exactly what is happening.
Right.
But kind of what they've said is they're kind of restructuring the ag leases, essentially. So they're putting those back up for auction. So it sounds like other people have opportunities to acquire them. Mm-hmm. Because I think what they're saying is there was an issue with people having them and not using them.
Right.
And then on the sales of the public lands end of things, kind of what we've heard is that it's just going to be mostly like highways, yards, and that haven't been used.
Cabin areas, maybe.
Yeah, stuff like that. So yes, it's nothing, doesn't sound like anything's going to happen too fast.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
I just think, like, I know I haven't been reading too much up on it, but I read kind of what they're proposing, I guess, or their ideas behind it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, like, scary, like, in a way, if I mean, the way I understand it, like, for, say, those farmers that are in, you know, St. Rose, McCurry area, that there's quite a bit of lease land up there.
Yeah.
And for them to lose that is going to be, you know, hard on their business. And
yeah,
they, you know, one guy, I read an article, and one farmer was saying, well, that's fine, but then you auction it off to a bigger producer that brings cows up here just to summer them and graze them in the summertime.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they take the cows out. Well, that person isn't spending any money in those little communities that are already struggling.
Yeah.
So I think, like, I don't know, the economy is going to be affected by it if it does go that way. Not saying that it will, but just, like, you know, there's people that need to ask questions and need to be participating, I guess, in any way, just to open up some doors for everyone else. And I know, like, you and Tristan have been doing quite a bit of work, just, you know, just asking questions and sending out letters. And but yeah, so
it's, well, we've had quite a few people approach us about that.
Yeah.
And concerned people. So I mean, one thing I can say about that is if you do have concerns about it, and obviously there's lots of farmers and people out there with concerns about it, I would be certainly contacting your local politician to see what they can tell you about it.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, we can certainly keep you up to date as much as we can. I know MWF will probably keep people up to date, but if there's anything that people are against, like, or for, or whatever, contacting the politicians is like the legwork to that.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, that's the other thing too. I think finding any, if it is just questions that you have, or anything, like, finding any avenue to answer those questions and just making sure it's the proper answers. And I think, like, if, like you said, people have been contacting us, and I think that we can provide whatever we can to anybody. So if anyone has any questions or wants, you know, to be heard in some way, shape, or form, they can always email us. And
yeah,
we've got some avenues we can take with MWF and a couple other people. And for stuff like that, we just got to work together and get the groups together that for the right reasons.
Yeah, that's one thing. I mean, one thing you often see on the forums is people, if there's an issue with something, people will complain about it, but
yeah,
on the forum, and they often won't become unified, though. They will just sit behind a type their keyboard or their phone or whatever. So to make change, you definitely have to unify or squeaky wheel get greased most of the time.
And I think I just think that as like a outdoor group in Manitoba, we do have, you know, I think as our group, we got to be on the right side of the fence and try to be a little bit of a voice somewhere as well. So like I said, I haven't been doing much of anything, but you and Tristan have been doing quite a bit. And if you guys have, you know, like I said, questions or whatever, just let us know. We might be able to answer them. And if not, we can direct you in the right direction.
Yeah. And I think there's, I mean, as far as selling off public lands goes, there's a big course of action that has to happen. And I've been told that if any public lands do come up for sale,
right,
for the government to completely get rid of them, they generally have to go through TLE, so like Treaty Land Entitlement, I believe.
Okay.
And the treaty people have first crack at purchasing that property too. So
right.
Yeah.
For sale.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, man. Like, the thing that I worry about is, like, I like to trust the government that we have in power, no matter, I don't like to get into politics normally. But the thing is like, sometimes when they, like, make a statement like, oh, yeah, we're just going to auction off these little pieces.
Yeah.
And it's, like, almost like, okay, is that a loophole? Because you might add in these big, you know, 640 acres over here that was whatever at one time. And
yeah.
So that's why you got to ask questions. And there's nothing wrong with asking questions as long as you're not making, you know, as long as you're not making stupid statements and stupid opinions.
Yeah.
And fluff, like, you know, just making it worse.
Yeah. You got to be diplomatic about it.
Yeah.
And that's one thing you want to try and remain diplomatic, be unified. That's the best way to move forward.
Yeah, for sure.
Any issue.
And I think it's just safe to say, I think that nobody really knows what the exact plan is, like you're saying.
Yeah.
So that's why people ask the questions.
Yeah.
And that's why farmers are getting involved, and that's why outdoor groups are getting involved, just because you don't want them to slip that loophole statement in, and then all of a sudden there's land's gone.
Yeah, it's kind of scary reading that, that's for sure. And the thing was, like, they slipped it into the financial section on that 100-day action plan. So, yeah. I mean, when you looked over the sustainable development section, you're like, oh, yeah, it looks pretty good. And then I didn't read the financial thing until it was brought up to our attention. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
But I think there's a little bit more involved there than what we know about. And it doesn't sound like the outdoor community will have any huge impact, any at all, potentially. But the farmers, I think, might have some interesting side effects from this.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, that, like, outdoor communities might not have that huge of an impact, but the farmers might, and maybe we should just get on, you know, maybe that train if it's, you know, help them out a bit. I mean, we rely heavily on the agricultural side in Manitoba, and, you know, a lot of us not only hunt on public land, but hunt on private land, and a lot of farmers, you know, kind of cater to us for our outdoor needs. So yeah, like, I think it'd be, I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does everyone know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Find out actually what is happening.
Yeah, what is happening. Don't start this ship up too early.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing too, is just like, everyone just got to remember, like, public lands are our land. Like, it's ours. Everyone owns it.
Yeah.
So, like, some people might think, oh, public land, whatever. Not a big deal. I don't hunt on them anyways. That might be fine, but someday that might be the only thing you can hunt on, because someday maybe the farmers will be like, no, screw the hunters, no more hunters, they screwed it up enough.
Yeah.
Or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And one thing about Manitoba, too, you think about that, I mean, the public land is, there's very vast out there. Like, you drive from, essentially, once you get north of, like, Gibsonville to Thompson, there's all public land, but how fertile is that land for stuff? There's not a whole bunch going on there.
Yeah, exactly.
So, there's definitely some concerned areas, especially down south here.
Yeah. And the other thing that I kind of think about too, and I don't want to like dive right into it, but like there's those quarters and sections and stuff in southern, southwest, or even the central part of Manitoba that's like public land or lease land or whatever. And I just like, man, some of those places are like havens for deer and like wildlife. And if they did just outright sell them or lease them off to whatever, and they push those bushes over to sow the fields, man, I just like, I don't like that.
Yeah. You
know? I support farmers. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, it's just like, man, just leave those little bushes alone. Cause they're doing, you know, they have a lot of wildlife in there.
Yeah. They support that habitat, right?
You run cattle through there all day and it doesn't really affect them as much, but when you start pushing trees over and stuff and see you later.
Yeah. Yeah. Still need that cover, right?
That's right.
What else do we have on the docket?
We got our store up and running. We got it basically fully stocked with sweaters, hats.
Yeah. Actually stuff's going pretty quick though.
Yeah.
So
we're having a tough time kind of keeping up, but
if you want something, check out the store, online store, panoramicoutdoors.com, and that has the latest up-to-date stock, so check it out, order.
Yeah, and the other thing that we're going to have to do, I think we gave them a few shout-outs today, but Harvester Outdoors, we still got some hats there.
Yeah, Harvester Outdoors, they got their archery lanes. I'm actually back to my bow. I'm pumped to get that thing because I want to take it down to Harvester there and fire some arrows down their archery lane and check that out.
Yeah, I've never been there, but from what I can tell from some pictures on Instagram and his podcast, check out his podcast, by the way, they got a longer lane than normal. Like, is it 40 yards or a little bit longer maybe?
I'd be lying if I told you I knew.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's something that you can find out for us so we can talk about it next time.
Yeah. They're getting all kinds of stuff in there now. They got gun room going on and all kinds of like new gear all the time. If anybody's listening to this, I'll give you one day's heads up. The Wild at Heart coming up on October 19th. It's going to be a full crowd in there. And it's going to be an awesome time. Some crazy prizes. I think this podcast is dropping on the 10th. Ticket sales end on the 11th. So if you're listening to this on the 10th and you want tickets for the event, make sure you call the MWF or get on their website and buy them online.
Yeah. And if, say, last minute guy wanted to buy a ticket, could they call, or not, maybe not call you, but message us and you can hook them up quick?
I do have some tickets for sale, but like I said, anything up to the 11th, there's no tickets being sold past 11th.
Oh, yeah. So that event, that's just the supper, right?
Yeah.
It's supper, like, and like, there's no like awards. That's different? That's a different supper?
Yeah, I don't believe there's any awards.
Okay.
I'd have to check the...
Sorry for putting you on the spot. But I just like, I remember a few years ago I went to one and it was like the big head night, but that wouldn't be the same one, but they're obviously going to have one in November, or I guess it'd be December probably, right?
They have some entertainment and some stuff and some talks and auctions. Right. They got, there's Alumacraft donated a boat, Honda donated a quad for live auction. And
Panoramic donated some sweaters. There's
some Panoramic gear in there.
The top three.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. So there's some pretty awesome prizes to come check out. I think they were talking about hooking up with a local brewery to do some work together there.
Oh, yeah. Nice. So, is there that 50-50 draw that they're advertising, that getting drawn that night? Or when is that? Or is it
over? No, they drew that already.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. But I think they're planning on putting together another one coming up here.
Oh, yeah. And another question about that. Is there any of those raffle draws? Do you have to be in attendance, or can you buy those tickets separately, or that's only if you attend the supper?
Yeah, I think you have to be in attendance.
And what is a ticket for supper? What does that go
for? So the ticket for the banquet's $80.
Yeah. So there you go, $80 for entertainment for hours.
Yeah.
A supper, and then you get a chance to win boats, quads,
yeah,
sweaters.
It's a wicked night, and it's MWF's major fundraiser for the year, essentially. Right. So going to a fantastic organization. It's a little bit of a biased opinion, I guess you could say, but they do a lot of work, and they're always looking out for outdoorsmen and outdoors women and getting them involved, which is the big thing, right?
Right.
Getting people involved. The more the merrier, essentially.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm looking forward to those big head nights. I was talking to a guy that does one in Notre Dame, or helps out in the one in Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And they changed their head, like, big head night. Normally what it is like, usually like the first Wednesday or the first Saturday or whatever after deer hunting season. And they changed theirs to like January.
Oh, really?
And he said, like, when they changed it to January, it just, like, went through the roof.
Really? Like,
yeah, and I thought it was kind of odd, but me and him started talking about it, and he was kind of explaining their theory. And, like, by the time December rolls around, you're always busy with Christmas parties, you know, your wife's Christmas, whoever. And then, you know, you're getting ready for Christmas holidays, etc. And then that week after Christmas and New Year's, when there's not much going on, you know, yeah, you might be broke over after Christmas, but he said it works, and they're very successful.
Like, that's incredible.
Really, like, I think he said in, like, the last 5 years, they, like, doubled their numbers.
See, I think that would have been opposite, because my thought process on that would be, people are still riding the high of hunting season, and they got to be like, man, I got to check out what's out there this year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Did my buck get shot that I had on camera?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But I guess you could see that in January too.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they got a new thing going. Maybe some other clubs could try it out and see if it actually works.
But yeah.
Maybe it's just that area. That's a big hunting area too, though. It's
like, yeah.
A lot of hunters in there. Yeah. But anyways, that was our fall, mid-fall, what do you want to call it?
Mid-fall update.
We call it waterfowl because we talked for like 30 minutes about waterfowl.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
We do have some sweet waterfowl hoodies.
Oh, yeah. We should mention that. If you guys haven't seen them, like Chase said, check out our website. And hopefully we'll be getting more and more pictures in to kind of throw them on Instagram, Facebook.
Yeah.
But they're beautiful, man.
Yeah. And if there's anybody out there that's wearing our stuff already, certainly send the pictures in.
Yeah.
Because we love seeing it. We'll share it.
And we might have some toques coming down the line. Who knows?
Yep.
Some wind to keep your ears warm when you're ice fishing.
Yep. Could happen.
Well, right on.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for listening in. Keep your lines tight. Shoot straight.
Shoot straight.
Good luck out there.
Yeah. Later.